everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on America is a Christian Nation when we come back. You know, once in a while, we get a look at the real world through the eyes of an insider. An insider like John Swinton, for instance. Swinton was a newspaper editor in New York. And Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet given to him by the leaders of his craft. And someone who knew neither the press nor John Swinton offered a toast to the independent press. And Swinton outraged all of his colleagues by replying that there's no such thing at this date of the world's history, in America at least, as an independent press. Now you know it and I know it. And there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. Now I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinion out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things. And any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. Now, the business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. Now, you know it and I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? We are the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We're the jumping jacks. They pull the strings and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. You know, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of the Global 2000 program and this New World Order. The men and families like the Windsors and Rockefellers and the Bushes and Bundys and Carnegies and Vanderbilts. That's why I contend that it's time that we wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, and let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order nightmare and this Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000, Bible prophecy, and this New World Order, call and order our free General Law CD package. It's a four-hour compact disc, three discs, and it's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. And once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on to the email and send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. America is a Christian nation. I don't know how many times I've heard that bandied about. I don't know if it's true or not. It may have been true in the past, but it's no longer true. At least it's not true today. America's official recognition of religion is in secular humanism, so says our Supreme Court. So if there was a time in the past when we were a Christian nation, it's no longer a Christian nation. And all of us had a choice to make, and we made that choice years ago. Well, a Baptist pastor years ago, back in 1983 now, some 20 years ago or more, had something to say about this concept of Christians and Christian freedom, and this thing of having a right to educate Christian children in Christian families' doctrine. His name was Everett Sullivan. He was a Baptist pastor. He gained great renown as the Nebraska preacher who went to jail rather than to license his school. Well, in a recent talk to a Missouri congregation, here's what he had to say. He said, "Now, many people have asked me, how did they get you in jail? And let me say this, and it may shock you, but I personally was never charged with anything. I've never been charged with breaking the law, and I've never been charged with committing a crime, and I've never had a trial. So you may ask again, well, how in the world did they put you in jail?" He said, "Well, I may not know very much about your church, and I may hit you here, but I'm finding that this is one of the things that God wants me to tell churches. You see, they sued the church corporation. Now, I don't know if your church is incorporated or not, but if it is, then you better listen up. When a church incorporates, it becomes a creature of the state, and its officers become agents of the state. And the agents and the officers and the corporation have no constitutional rights. And by the way, if you take a license out for anything, you lose your constitutional right for the thing that you took the license out for. Now, I'm going to give you a shocker. And I don't like to do these things because it makes me look so ridiculous. But you see, we've learned some things over the years. Now, for 6 years, we went down to the legislature in Lincoln, and we said to the legislature, give us some relief. And now I'm glad tonight that I can stand here before you and say that they did not give us the relief that we were seeking. And I'm glad they didn't, because the Constitution says that it's an area that they shouldn't be involved in the first place. But as we testified before the committee, the parents would testify, and the parents would weep, and they would say, these are our little children. God gave us these children, and we are responsible for them, as they look across the table at those senators. Now, Senator Pfeiffer was a young man about 38 years old. He's an attorney and a legislator. He was on the subcommittee for the Education Committee, and these parents were testifying, and Mr. Pfeiffer looked back across the table and said to this one young mother who had just completed her testimony, he asked her, "Do you have a state marriage license?" And she said, "Yes, I do." And then he responded, "Well, hasn't anybody ever told you that a marriage license is a privilege granted by the state, and that every child born to a family with a state marriage license is a ward of the state?" Now, did you hear that, boys and girls? Here's a senator, a state senator, a lawyer. This woman is complaining that the state and social lady is giving her fits, and that the state is involving itself in her life and in her family and in her child rearing, and she doesn't like it. And so she and a number of other Christian parents have gone down to the legislature, and they're testifying before the Education Committee. And they're saying, give us some relief. You know, you people don't have any business in here sending social lady around telling us where to educate our children and how they should be disciplined and so on. And this state senator looked across the table and said, "Hey, lady, have you got a state marriage license?" And she conceded. She said, "Yes, yes, I do." And he said, "Well, hasn't anybody ever told you? When you went to school, lady, you went to high school, you're a voter more than likely. You're a sovereign citizen. You execute prerogatives. You're the master. I'm the servant. I'm your legislator. You elected me. You sent me here to the state house. Don't you know, master? Don't you know, sovereign citizen? Hasn't anybody ever told you that a marriage license is a privilege granted by the state, and that every child born to a family with a state marriage license is a ward of the state, is the property of the state?" Evidently, this lady votes. Evidently, this lady is a citizen, a sovereign citizen. I hear that bandied about quite often. Evidently, she's a Christian. Now, Senator Peter Hoagland was on a television show with me debating this issue, and what he said to me on that show was repeated by the head of the state PTA and by the executive director of the State School Board Association and by the executive director of the Teachers Union. Four people said the same thing. We were on Channel 6 live at 5. And so the newscaster, a lady, looked over at me and she said, "Well, Pastor Sullivan, only 8 states in the union require licensed schools and certified teachers, so it surely must not be that important of an issue." And so I said, "You're right, and there's a way to solve this problem, and it's national standardized testing. We had our students tested by the state's own experts. And we're a year ahead of the public schools, and we're 2.5 years ahead of the Omaha public schools, and we were so good that the judge wouldn't even let us put it in the record." Now, this is Sullivan. And he's telling the news anchor, the reporter, our children in our Baptist school are smarter than the children in the Omaha public schools. They're further ahead than the children in the state as a whole in our Baptist school with unlicensed teachers and without a license and without certification. We're smarter. And he says, "We're so good the judge wouldn't even let us put it in the record." Well, now, we should ask ourselves, why wouldn't the judge let this guy put this in the record? And the answer is because it's irrelevant and it's immaterial. It's irrelevant and immaterial. We're not here to discuss. We're not here to decide. We're not here to embroil ourselves into who's smarter than who. We're here to ask the question, is your school licensed and certified? It either is or it isn't. If it isn't, it's illegal. If it is, it's legal. Licensed and certified. So she looked over at Senator Peter Hoagland and she said, "Now, Senator, why is Nebraska making such a big deal out of this?" Now listen up, folks, because here's what Senator Peter Hoagland said to the whole listening audience. He said, "The reason that we're making a big deal out of this is because fundamental Bible-believing Christians do not have a right to educate children in their doctrine. Because in the year 2000, America is going to be part of a one-world socialist order. And their children will not fit in." That's quite a statement. Let me repeat it. Here's a state senator, and he says to everybody out there that's got an ear to hear and an eye to see, he said, "The reason that the state of Nebraska is making a big deal out of this licensure and certification of schools is because fundamental Bible-believing Christians do not have a right to educate their children in their doctrine. Because in the year 2000, America is going to be part of the one-world socialist order, and their children will not fit in." And that's the problem that you people down in Texas have with these Mormons. Their children are not being educated to the state of Texas standards, and they're not going to fit into the New World Order. Now, all of you people that send your children to the public schools, now that's fine. No problem there. Your children will all fit in because they're all being taught, trained, and educated to be communists. Now, remember what Senator Pfeiffer said. "Hasn't anybody ever told you that a marriage license is a privilege from the state, that every child born to a family with a state marriage license is a ward of the state?" Boys and girls, there's been marriage going on here on planet Earth for thousands of years without state marriage licenses. Now, for some reason, we here in America decided that we needed to change that. And we did. We changed it. We don't have patriarchal families. We don't have patriarchal marriage. We now have state marriage. We have a three-party limited general partnership between the boy, the girl, and the state. Now, there's three types of marriage here on planet Earth. Three. You can have a state marriage. That's what everybody approves of and practices. Then you can have a common law marriage. That's what nobody approves of and only a few people practice. And then you can have patriarchal marriage. And that's something that nobody's even heard of, much less practice. Three types of marriage. Now, marriage was created back at the Garden of Eden. I don't know who issued Adam and Eve's marriage license, but God always referred to Eve as Adam's wife. So, evidently, somehow or another, Adam and Eve were married. I don't know who officiated at the ceremony. I don't even know if there was a ceremony. Scripture doesn't say, but it does say that they were married. Now, here in America, if you don't have a marriage license, it's very common for people to live together. And so they'll say, well, this is my boyfriend, or this is my girlfriend. In fact, even in the news, if they're referring to somebody that's married, they'll say, well, this guy's wife or this woman's husband. But if they're married, then it's their boyfriend or it's their girlfriend. And that's very common. I don't know what the percentage is, but it's pretty high. Around a third of the people in the country, I think, is running around now. And they're not married. They're living, they're cohabiting together. They have children together, but they're not married. Now, in Tennessee, the Supreme Court of Tennessee put out a finding. It's recorded in the student section called Common Law Marriage in Tennessee, where they explain it like this. Marriage has been defined by the Tennessee Supreme Court as follows. It, marriage, is something more than a contract. If you got a pencil and paper, you ought to be writing these notes down so when you're sitting down over dinner tonight or over breakfast with the wife tomorrow, you know, you can say, you know, or the husband or the boyfriend or the girlfriend. You can say, well, did you know that? Well, I just didn't know this, but here's what I just heard. Marriage is something more than a contract. It's rather to be deemed an institute of society. It's founded upon the consent and the contract of the parties. And in this view, it has some peculiarities in its nature, its character, its operation, and the extent of obligation, different from what belong to ordinary contracts. So if you've taken a note or two here, marriage is something more than a contract. That's number one. Number two, marriage is a contract. And then number three, now, this is an extraordinary contract. Marriage is not an ordinary contract. So you have contracts, and then you have contracts, and then you have contracts. And marriage is something more than a contract. It's a contract, all right, but boy, this is something extraordinary. Now, oftentimes, when people come into school, they will say, when we ask the question, or they'll make an observation, they'll say, well, now a contract to be binding has to be agreed upon by all of the parties. You have to have full disclosure, they believe. That's not true. You do not have to have full disclosure. You don't have to know the terms and conditions of the contract to make it binding upon you. Now, you may believe that, but that doesn't make it true just because you believe it. And in fact, I'm here to tell you that it isn't true. And so now I just told you. And oftentimes people write me and they'll say, well, no, I don't believe it. And I write back and I say, well, is it untrue because you don't believe it? Is truth predicated upon what you believe? And if you don't believe it, it's not true. Well, now, down in Texas, there was a group of people living together. I think they're called Mormons. And the state came in and seized their children. I think they took around, I don't know, was it 400 children? I think it was somewhere like this. It was a bunch. Now, the state Supreme Court down there said, hey, wait a minute. Now, the state has overreached its authority. But shouldn't we ask the question, what made those social ladies down there think they had the authority to go in there and take those children to start with? Where did the jurisdiction, where did the authority come from? Came from the marriage license, and I've never heard of one of those people complain or plead out of a fiction of law that they're married and have a state marriage license. So let's understand something here. The presumption is when you walk into court that you're married. That's just a given. If you're not married, the burden's on you to come forward and plead out of the fiction of law that you're married. That'd be number one. Number two, a second fiction of law is that all these children have birth certificates. And if your child doesn't have a birth certificate then, it would be up to you to come in and say, my child doesn't have a birth certificate either. Now, most of you are sitting there saying, well, who in the world would want to come into court and tell the judge I don't have a marriage license and I don't have a birth certificate? What relevance does that have? Well, it would have a lot of relevance as it relates to the authority of the jurisdiction of the state of Texas to come take your child. Because if you have a marriage license, the state has a one-third interest in the child. And if you have a birth certificate, the state has a 100% interest in the child, and you have none. Zero. Zilch. And you're nothing more than a babysitter for the state. So the state came in and took those children away from the babysitters, the parents. And the state said, well, you overreached. The state Supreme Court says you overreached your authority. So those parents do have some rights involved here. Something about their babysitter status gives them some claim, some interest in those children. So marriage is something more than a contract. Something more than a contract. It's an extraordinary contract, and unlike other contracts, it is indissoluble between the parties. That's pretty important. You know, if you and I made a contract, you and I could dissolve the contract. But if you and your wife make a contract with the state for marriage, you and your wife cannot terminate the contract. You ever stop and think about that? So if you want to terminate that marriage contract, you have to go to the state and get the state's permission. This is called a divorce. So the state's got something to say about this. Unlike other contracts, it's indissoluble between the parties, and when consummated according to law, it's of perpetual obligation, and it cannot be renounced at the will of either or both parties. Once you make this contract, that's it. You cannot rescind it. It continues to exist until a dissolution is pronounced, either by the death of one of the parties or by a divorce. Only two ways out, death and divorce. The rights and duties growing out of marriage are not left to the option or to the agreement of the parties. But to some extent, it is a matter of municipal regulation over which the will of the parties can have no control. So the terms and conditions of this marriage, you, the boy and the girl, have no control over it whatsoever. Zero. Now, let me ask you a question here. Let's suppose I came to you and your wife and I said, let me propose a contract. And on paragraph 18, I'm going to put a clause in here that says, the terms and conditions of this contract are irrevocable without my permission. And the terms and conditions of this contract can be altered, reformed, or amended at any time by me without any consent from you, or even without your knowledge. Would you sign a contract like that with me? Well, not unless you're brain dead. Well, then let me ask you a second question. If you wouldn't sign a contract like that with me, and I'm a pretty nice guy, why would you sign that contract with a nameless, faceless bureaucrat that you've never seen, never heard of, don't know his name, couldn't recognize at high noon with a road map in both hands? Why would you do such a thing? Because all of you people out there with marriage licenses now, that's what you've done. Already past tense. So, if the police come and break down your door and come in with social lady and take your children, take their children out of your custody, since you're the babysitter and for some reason they've decided that they want to change babysitters, don't complain about it. You had a choice to make and you made it. Now, oftentimes when we explain this to students here in the classroom, they say, but I didn't know. Since when does ignorance of the law give you some kind of an excuse to disobey the law? Now, you know, all of your life you've heard ignorance of the law is no excuse. And you're sitting there saying, but I didn't know? Excuse me, aren't you a sovereign citizen? Aren't you the master? Aren't you a voter? Don't you elect these people as your servants? You know, that's pretty scary. When people sit here in the classroom and they say, I didn't know that, I say, do you vote? And they all raise their hands. Yeah, I vote. Who are you voting for? If you're so damn dumb that you don't even know what the terms and conditions of a contract and a birth certificate are, why are you out here voting for the people that are going to alter, reform, amend, and change those laws without any notice or without any consultation with you, and you're claiming to be the master? You know, that's pretty scary, isn't it? I mean, how would you like to be flying in an airplane and the captain comes on and says, this is the first time I've ever flown a 747. It's a hell of an airplane and there's a lot of instruments up here in the cockpit that I've never seen before in my flying career. Oh, I'm a pilot, all right. Don't get me wrong, ladies and gentlemen. I'm a pilot. I've been flying twin-engine airplanes. I flew a Cherokee 6. I flew an Aztec a couple of times, and I've got an endorsement on my private pilot ticket for retractable gears and twin engine. And so today I'm your captain and I'm flying this 747. But about half the instruments up here I've never seen in my life. I haven't got a clue as to what they're for. Do you want to fly with somebody like that? You want to be a participant in a political process where you've got people out here voting that don't even know what the legal consequences are of the laws that these lawmakers are going to be enacting? You're sending people off to Washington, D.C. and Lincoln, Nebraska and Sacramento, California and Albany, New York, and they're going to make laws for you and you don't even understand what these laws are? Huh? Have we taken leave of our senses here, boys and girls? Have we gone stark raving mad in this country? There's more. The rights and duties growing out of marriage are not left to the option or the agreement of the parties, but to some extent are matters of municipal regulation over which the will of the parties can have no control. It is an institution which lies at the very foundation of all social order and morality, and it constitutes the chief cornerstone of the whole structure of civilized society. It, marriage, is an institution which lies at the very foundation of all socialist order. Are you really sure that you want a socialist government in control of your marriage? I mean, I'm not telling you that you shouldn't. That's what you decided, and I guess your decision's as good as anybody else's. But have you really thought about a socialist government, a communist government, and this marriage thing over here is in the hands and in the control of the Congress and of your state legislatures, who are communists and socialists, and this is the central structure of civilized society? Well, that's what they're telling you. Actually, I thought it came from the Bible. I thought that it was an indice that was relevant to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. I didn't know that the state was very competent in legislating morality. In fact, the federal government, that is, the United States federal government, took over Mustang Ranch out in Nevada. Now, Mustang Ranch, for those of you that don't know, that's a whorehouse up north of Reno, Nevada. It's a whorehouse, Mustang Ranch. And for some reason, the owners of Mustang Ranch got crossways with the federal government. They didn't pay their taxes. And so the federal government came in, took it over, ran it for 16 months. Now, here's your government, the government of the United States of America, running a whorehouse for 16 months until they could sell it to new owners. And I got to ask, this is the authority that you go to dictate your morals? A government that runs a whorehouse, and that's where you get your morals? These are the people you vote for? Let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour at Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries worldwide daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about America is a Christian nation. Well, it may have been at one time, but it is no longer. And I'm not here selling Christianity, per se, either. I'm just a reporter. Christianity gets its origins here from the Roman Catholic Church, Roman Catholicism. And Americans have decided to reject Christianity, and every day that you send your child to a public school, you reinforce and validate that change from Christianity to secular humanism, which our Supreme Court has now identified as the official religion of the United States. Now, looking again here at marriage in Tennessee, and I'm just picking Tennessee as just one state. We have 50 states here in the United States. Not all states are the same. Different states have different laws concerning marriage, but everybody is in agreement that there are three types of marriage. But the only two types of marriage that states are engaged in or concerned with are common law marriages and civil law marriages. None of the states comment on or take cognizance of or get involved in patriarchal marriages. Patriarchal. Probably never heard that term before. Now, on another occasion, our Supreme Court, speaking of a common law marriage, said that no particular form was required to be observed by the parties entering into it. A simple agreement by a man and woman that they would live together as a man and wife constituted a valid marriage. And so, a common law marriage doesn't have a state marriage license. That's kind of an oddity. And these two people, that's the boy and the girl, can enter into this common law marriage anytime they want. Now, living together, you know, as Julie and Joe, doesn't necessarily make you married. And you don't have a common law marriage because you're living together or having sexual relations together. That doesn't create marriage. There is something that creates marriage, but that's not it. This common law form, which existed in England and in some of the states in the earlier development of our nation, due to the vast space and the difficult traveling facilities and the scarcity of squires, it has now been abrogated in many states today, including Tennessee, by statute. So common law marriage in most states has been abrogated by statute. The state just comes in and says, well, we don't recognize common law marriage. So I'll just clarify the story here and tell you that I've got a common law marriage. And I was married in Texas, which is a common law state. But just because you're married in a common law state doesn't give you a common law marriage. And just because you're married in a common law state doesn't give you a patriarchal marriage. And you can't create a patriarchal marriage just by willing or wishing that it were so. The difference between a civil marriage, a common law marriage, and a patriarchal marriage is a legal distinction. And each one of these marriage states is legally distinguishable. You either have it or you don't. You know, one or the other. Now, oftentimes I have people, you know, they disagree with me and they get kind of vociferous. You know, they'll raise their voice sometimes. You know, and then I pause and ask them, well, now, if you yell and scream at the top of your lungs, and you can make more noise than I can, will that make it true? Will it change anything? So, you know, I didn't come here to persuade you that I'm right or that you need to change something. I'm not here to convince you that I'm right and you're wrong. I don't care. As a reporter, I'm just here to report information. And sometimes I'm surprised. I have people that come into school here. And sometimes these people have master's degrees, and once in a while they even have PhDs. I mean, you know, some guy that with a PhD, he's supposed to be real smart. A master's degree, that means he's smart. Or maybe the PhD is real smart, and the master's degree, he's just real smart. And then if you got a college degree, you're real smart. And if you got a high school diploma, you're smart. And then if you're something less than that, then you're dumb, I guess. I don't know. So the statutes dealing with this subject, according to Vernier, fall into five classes. Vernier now is a legal authority. Those that specifically validate common law marriages, that's number one. Those that set out laws requiring a definite procedure to be followed to be married, that's two, but saying nothing about common law marriages. And those that specifically declare common law marriages invalid, that's three. And then there's those that say some technicality in the performance of the requirements will not invalidate the marriage, that's four. And then number five, those that have been construed by the courts to be mandatory, thereby invalidating such marriages. Now, Tennessee is placed in this last category by all of the authorities. So if I went over to Tennessee and I said, well, this is my wife, well, the state would look at me and say, well, where's your marriage license? And I'd say, well, I don't have one. They'd say, well, we don't recognize your marriage. Isn't that just real special? So the state of Tennessee would not recognize my marriage. Conversely, I would say, well, so what? You know, it could well be that the nation of Albania doesn't recognize my marriage either. And maybe Brazil or Rwanda or the Cameroons or Egypt, maybe they don't recognize it. So I just sit here and say, well, so what? I don't care. Doesn't affect me one way or the other. So if you're living in a civil law state, hell, you could be living in a common law state and not have a patriarchal marriage. Not that you'd necessarily want one. Most people, if you told them that there's a thing called a patriarchal marriage, they'd look at you and say, oh, was it? They don't know. And these people vote. Hell, these people might have degrees and letters after their name. Now, Tennessee is placed in this last category by all of the authorities. Our statutes require that a license must issue from the county in which the female resides or where the marriage is solemnized. That's one. The parties must declare in the presence of a minister or an officer that they accept each other as man and wife. That's two. The parties must be of a certain age. That's three. A recital of the performance of the ceremony must be endorsed on the back of the license. That's four. And the license must be returned to the county of origin. That's five. Now, you got five requirements here to have a civil law marriage. I didn't perform any of those five. And I got a wife. Now, there's a very important reason why you might want to consider marriage without a marriage license. I mean, just as a consideration. For instance, the state does not produce any offspring. There's never been a case where the state of Texas ever produced one living, live birth human being. Did you know that? Neither is New York, California, Washington, Oregon, or North Dakota. And these are all sovereign states. And these sovereign states enter into partnerships with real live human beings, boys and girls, who do in fact produce human live birth offsprings. And the state ends up owning all of them. Now, how in the world can that be? Well, listen to this. On Monday, May the 19th, 1988, a question was put. This question was put to Mr. Jim Maddox, who at that time was the Attorney General of the state of Texas. Attorney General Jim Maddox, state of Texas. Here's the question. It says, is it true that the state of Texas owns our children? Very simple, straightforward question. Is it true? Or you could ask it, does the state of Texas own our children? And the Attorney General responded, now this is your chief law enforcement officer in the state. He said, yes. Yes, it is true. And not only your children, but you too. You also. The state of Texas not only owns your children, but they own you also. So, you Mormons down there in Texas, not only does the state of Texas own your children, but they own all of you parents as well. Isn't that special? How in the hell did the state of Texas... Wait a minute. How does a paper fiction like the state of Texas, a corporation, come into possession of the children of the sovereign citizens of the state of Texas, the voters? How did that happen? What happened down there in Texas? That social lady, policemen, and agents of a paper fiction, an artificial entity, can come into your homes and take your children right out of those homes, put them in foster care, and you people don't even have any say-so over it. Isn't that special? And you voted for these people that did that, too. Just keep that one in mind. Because sometimes people, you know, they're wedded. Here in this country, we're wedded to voting and democracy. I mean, if you don't vote, you know you're something less than human. there's something wrong with you, you know, if you don't vote. So I got to tell you that I don't vote. So that'll tell you right away there's something wrong with me. Hell, I never denied it. I just took a look at it one day and I said, well, what am I doing this for? How does this benefit little Georgie Gordon here? How does a marriage license benefit me? How does giving the state of Missouri a one-third interest in my offspring benefit George and Jackie? How does getting a birth certificate and giving 100% of my interest and my wife's interest in our children to the paper fiction, the state of Missouri, how does that benefit George and Jackie Gordon? I asked that question years ago, and I came to a conclusion. It doesn't benefit me at all. So I don't think I'm going to do that. So that's why I thought I'd make this report to you, because oftentimes people come into class, you know, and they're licensed, bonded, insured, registered. Now, here's a story that comes out of the Health Services Agency of the Department of Public Health in Shasta County, California. Listen to this. It's addressed to Ms. Nancy Robinson. Ms. M.S. Now, I don't know about Ms. Robinson, but if I was Ms. Robinson, I would really be bummed out, because this has to do with this Ms. Robinson's twin baby daughters born in a hospital. And Ms., you know, sends a signal to me that I'm not married. I think I'd want to be called Mrs., you know, if I was a female, rather than Ms., but it's Ms. Nancy Robinson. Says, Dear Ms. Robinson, as I understand it, you gave birth to twin girls on July 30, 1985 at Mercy Medical Center of Redding, California, and I also understand from the hospital staff that you did not desire to register the birth of your girls with them at this time. So I'm writing to inform you of information that you may be unaware of. Well, isn't that just special? So here's the Health Services Agency of the Department of Public Health of the County of Shasta, the state of California, and here's Social Lady writing this new mother a letter saying, you know, you young mother, I'm going to give you some information that you may be unaware of. That's scary as hell, because this lady's name is Linda L. Allen, the public servant, the social lady. And she, we presume, is a public servant, and we would presume that Ms. Robinson is a sovereign citizen and a registered voter. I would assume here that Linda Allen works for Nancy Robinson. I would assume that Nancy Robinson is the mistress of the state of California, the voter, the master, and that Linda Allen is the servant working for Nancy Robinson. But here comes the servant now. Social lady. The servant of the mistress. And says, let me tell you of some things that you may be unaware of. Huh? Huh? What's this all about? Excuse me. I'm kind of old-fashioned. See, I'm a master. I'm an employer. I go to my employees and I make announcements. And I tell them, I inform my employees of information that they may be unaware of. I don't tolerate my employees coming to me and saying, Master, let me inform you of information that you may be unaware of. At least not without an invitation. Now, I see here the servant, Linda Allen, writing to the mistress, Nancy Robinson, and telling her, now I'm going to write you to inform you of information you may be aware of. According to state regulations, let me tell you what the law is, Ms. Robinson. Excuse me, but, if you're a voter, shouldn't you know what the law is? I mean, after all, you're the master. As an old-timey employer, I always knew what my company policy was. I always knew what the rules and regulations of my company were. My employees might be in the dark. They might be misinformed, but I never was. I never at any time needed an employee to come up to me and explain company policy. But here's Miss Allen. Ms., I guess her name is Ms. Now, she didn't call herself Ms. She called herself Linda Allen. She comes up to her mistress, Nancy Robinson, and says, "Let me inform you of state law. I'm going to tell you what the law is." That's about like an employee coming up, "Hey, boss, let me tell you what company policy is." I'd say that's presumptuous, to say the least, wouldn't you? And Ms. Allen says, "If you do not register your daughter's birth within the first year of their delivery, they would then have to be registered on a delayed registration of birth form, and the cost would be, at this time, $15. So she's informing her mistress, Nancy Robinson, that if you don't register your daughters with the state right now, it's going to cost you $15 more to do it later. Well, I guess that's pretty nice. I mean, I guess that's like an employee coming up and saying, "Hey, boss, if we don't do this maintenance on the pickup now, it could blow the engine and cost you a lot more money later." Now, maybe that's got some merit to it. She just wants to save her mistress $15. Now, I took a look at that and I said, "Well, for $15, do you really think that it's important enough to have your servant write you a letter and tell you that, 'Hey, I'm real concerned about you, master. I'm concerned that you're going to waste, you're going to lose, it's going to cost you $15 if you don't do this right away.'" $15,000, I could see some merit to that, but $15 I thought was a little presumptuous. Considering the fact that you delivered in a hospital and had a physician in attendance, this would probably be of no consequence or trouble for you now, but in later years, this may be a problem for your daughters. Now, I'm sure you're aware of the utmost importance in having a birth certificate as soon as possible. Let me ask you out there in Radio Land, do you know what the utmost importance is in having a birth certificate as soon as possible? Not that you have one at all, but I mean soon, right away, right now. Don't wait. Don't postpone. Could you sit down right now and give me 5 reasons why your child should have a birth certificate or why you should obtain one for your child? I can't. And I'm going to give you 5 good reasons why you should get a birth certificate. Now, I didn't get one, and I'm not going to. And I rescinded mine, and if I had another child in the morning, I would not get a birth certificate for my child, and if I was going to get married again, I wouldn't get a marriage license. But that's just me, and I'm going to give you 5 reasons why. Now, here's what she said. She said, "In 20 years, the hospital records could have been destroyed, and your physician may be dead and unavailable to help you or your girls. Consider the fact that in order to be registered for public school, to apply for a marriage license, to apply for grants or scholarships in school, the state of California requires a certified copy of a birth certificate, and the federal government requires a certified copy of a birth certificate when applying for military service, a passport, or a social security card." Now, there are 6 reasons, boys and girls, why you should have a birth certificate as soon as possible. It's so that you can suck off the government trough. It's so that you can get a marriage license, grants, or scholarships at the state level, or that you can get military service, a passport, or a social security card. 6 things that we don't need, shouldn't have, and ought to avoid, like AIDS, herpes, and VD. And you can't get any of them without a birth certificate. Isn't that just real special? Now, I wouldn't tell you that you shouldn't get a birth certificate, and I don't care if you do or don't. But when social lady comes over and knocks on your door and says, "We're taking your kid," sit down and shut up, would you? Don't write me a letter and complain to me about the overreaching of the state's agents. Would you? the overreaching of the state's agents. I mean, you brought this on yourself. You're the one that decided. I mean, you're the master. You're the voter. You're the sovereign citizen. You're the boss. And then you decided that you needed a marriage license for whatever reason. So many times people say, well, I was ignorant and I didn't know. Well, if you were ignorant and didn't know, why did you get one? Excuse me, haven't you always been told all of your life, never sign a contract that you haven't read or had explained to you? This marriage license is a contract. Although in strictest terminology, they'll tell you that a license is not a contract. But here's the student section of the Tennessee Supreme Court. Your Tennessee Supreme Court says it's a contract. Yet marriage is something more than a contract. It's rather to be deemed an institute of society founded upon the consent and contract of the parties. Huh? Huh? Come on, boys and girls. Wake up. Smell the coffee here. Now here you are, a sovereign citizen, a voter. You got letters after your name. You've been to college. You're educated. And you're a member of society. God love you for it. And then you come into my classroom and you say, I was ignorant, didn't know what that meant. You know, if I was ignorant and didn't know what something meant, I wouldn't sign it because I'm ignorant and I don't know what it means. I don't know why I'm doing this. Now, oftentimes, salesmen will sell you something. They will say to you, oh, this is really good for you. You need to sign up because Mary and Joe and Bill and Bob and all these other people signed up. Okay. Well, maybe Mary and Bill and Bob and Joe and Sally are all smarter than I am, and they all read the contract and understand it fully, and I don't. And maybe I ought not to sign it because I'm ignorant. I mean, it's just a wild new concept for most of you people out there, but, you know, before you sign up, you know, for something, maybe you should know and understand the terms and conditions before you sign up. Maybe you should go to an attorney and have him explain it to you, like Senator Pfeiffer, who's an attorney, and said to this young mother, said, lady, don't you know, hasn't anybody ever told you that a marriage license is a three-party limited general partnership and that every child born to a family with a marriage license is a ward of the state? And I'm sure that young woman must have said, no, I didn't know that. Well, then why did you go down and get a marriage license, lady, if you didn't know that? Because you signed into a regulated program or entity over here for which you were ignorant, didn't have any understanding. And then when social lady comes out and executes the terms of the contract, you become very surprised. I didn't know. As if my ignorance should excuse me. I didn't know. Oh, you didn't know. Well, in that case, then we'll forgive and forget. Here, take your kid back. Well, I'm about out of time here again, boys and girls. We're going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you're listening to The Lost Hour, an editorial review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries daily over the Internet and radio worldwide. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archives. And that can all be accessed through our webpage at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.